I'm Jamie Pearson. I manage Digital History Program. And I recently got on a committee with the current PDP 11 team to celebrate the 20th anniversary. It's coming up in April. And I thought, from my position, taking care of a lot of oral history for the company, what better chance to bring a group together than to hear about what it was like then?
Even if they are to our partners.
It's okay.
It's yourself ugly.
Hey, we are the surviving old farts.
Right.
I think that's okay.
Yeah, you're not loud old farts. Hey, loud surviving old farts.
So this is a, it looks like a summit meeting, but it isn't. It's just for the purposes of audio taping and say what you like. It's
What's
not going to be.
You can do a lot of editing, because Tom, once in a while, just says.
Oh, that's okay. That's
yeah, all. And don't forget, it gets dark early.
Jim was good enough to help me put this together, and what we thought we'd start off with was the usual, which is overall introductions, who's who, what you did in 1970, and what you're doing now. This is Jack McLean, who manages the history program with me, who's taking care of writing history of the company. We also want to talk about what decisions were made then and how they impact what we do at Digital now. And if they do, and what was the impact of some of the technology of the 11? So if we could start maybe with you.
Okay, I'm Sutton Lacy. I was called loudmouth then, and I still am. And I was mechanical project technician on the 1120 group. I'm a product assurance engineering manager in video and Finta group right now.
I'm Tom Orr, and I'm sandwiched between Blazy and Stocky Brand, which puts both of my ears in jeopardy.
Now be nice.
I really don't recall what my exact position was way back then. I'm not sure I care, because it was not fun. But, there's Hattel. Wow.
John Hattel. John Hattel just walked in.
I'm currently a consulting engineer for the what used to be called the Low-End Systems Group. I think we recently changed our name. I don't know to what. Wow, some more old-timers digging in here.
Well, I'm Tom Stocky Brand, and I have CRS disease, so I don't remember what it was I was doing. So I probably will as this thing rolls along. But my wife says that's lots better than Alzheimer's disease, so not to worry. CRS meaning you can't remember shit. Right now, I have been out in Albuquerque for the last 13 years to escape the corporate, it's like wading ankle deep in honey. Everybody wants to help. And doing advanced development or R&D or something for input-output, and our current thing is multidimensional input-output in which you have touch and feel and smell and 3D and all that stuff in and out of computers.
I'm Dave Neville. I was a mechanical packaging engineer. Worked with loudmouth down the end a lot. We go back a long way. I'm currently in U.S. area manufacturing engineering group. And basically working in design for manufacturing and still very involved in packaging type issues on lots of products for the U.S. area.
I'm John Brzezinski, and I was in the field service support organization and on home to the engineering group, and eventually just transferred since I work down there all the time anyway. Currently I'm in the DSM product engineering group in Merrimack, looking at the value engineering opportunities on the FDDI products.
I'm Vince Bastiani. I came into PDP 11 engineering at the 11th hour. I think it was like 10 days before the machine was announced. And then I helped finish it after they announced the, or not finish the machines, but work on the others, the pieces that they didn't have to make a complete system. And I worked for Tom for a number of years and spent a number of years in Japan and just came back and since I worked for Tom, Tom was smart enough to stay in Albuquerque. I came back.
Well, Ken Hedberg, I started before the PDP 11 started. Roger and I kind of kicked things off, got things going. I kind of was a jack of all trades in the group. Since then, I've done about everything. Right now, I'm in sales. Learned how to lie, cheat, and steal.
Oh, yeah. My name is John Attell. I was responsible for diagnostics in PDP 11. Since then, I've done numerous things, playing manufacturing engineer in the Caribbean Islands. For the last, I guess, 7-8 years, I've been working in mid-range systems, introducing new products into manufacturing.
My name is Ron LaFosse. I had the pleasure or misfortune of trying to ship with these engineers and software people tried to put together, both from the mill here and when we transferred the product to Westfield. Since then, I've done a number of things. Among others, I left the company for a few years and I've been back almost 10 years now. But I work out of Boxborough and a manufacturing systems program manager for the Mayfair products.
I'm Rick Merrill, still programmer, even though we're supposed to be called software engineers these days. I remember shooting down some of the designs that preceded the PDP 11, and then Nick Mazzari sent four of us, Jim O'Loughlin, myself, and two other people, Roger Cady, down to Carnegie Mellon, where the PDP 11 was conceived and the instruction set was first formalized. I don't really have no idea, but we're trying to sell print servers.
I'm Jim O'Loughlin. My job was project engineer for the KA11, which was the first P11 processor. I, too, was involved in that trip down to Pittsburgh. The fourth person was Hal McFarlane. And presently, I'm working in a design interface group for packaging engineering, advanced development, in, forget what part of the company, I think it's semiconductor operations, although the name has recently changed, I think.
My name is Fred Knight. I'm currently in the RISTIS software development group as a system architect. In 1970, I was still in high school.
Make us jealous. Go ahead.
Well, you were the youngest then.
I'm Joe Maldi. I'm on the 20th anniversary planning committee based on the fact that since I've been in the company about 14 years now, I was on RISTIS, and now I manage the PDP 11 software, languages, compilers, and tools group.
I'm Christopher Crawford. I'm out of MSD-based product marketing. My primary and only focus right now is PDP 11s, trying to manage or help manage an input to the management of a mature product line, which, funny thing, it just won't die. There are more and more opportunities I keep uncovering every day. Question regarding where was I in 1970? In 1970, I was launching aircraft off the front end of an aircraft carrier in the North Atlantic, as doing the part, my part for the war effort, but handling the east side of the world instead of the west side of the world. I'm really excited that there were this many of you folks who could get together today, because many times we in marketing feel a little bit like we're sort of crying in the wind, as it were, but to see that there's this much avid interest still left and all of your collective history is going to be grand.
You have to understand, names still appear on Dick Best's option list, I assume. Could have found us if you really wanted to.
So speaks an engineer. Jim had called up and wanted to know, I know how many machines we've shipped, but what the dollar value was. And you guys got that in the PDP 11 study that was done in 85, correct?
Correct, in fact.
So we'd like to know, because I know it's 250,000 machines. The only computer that went that high, the 8's, the only one that was close, did 75. And I know we did 2 years ago $1.2 billion in sales in the 11. Other than that, I had no way of getting it, and I tried to get a hold of Lou Filippiano, and I just got hung up, and I didn't get a chance to get to you. So I think a lot of us would like to know exactly that 20-year history if you could get it to us.
Okay.
Jim was very interested in it.
Let me preface my next comment by saying that I can be very easily be your key contact into that kind of information. I may not know where the information is, but it's my job to go get it. I'm available on node AXIS:Crawford, so we can open a dialogue that way.
Let me request something a little different. Why don't you put together about 2 paragraphs, no more,
okay,
because that's all you can squeeze on one boob tube face,
okay,
and send it to her, who presumably has a list of this crop.
Okay. Excellent.
And then that way the request is done.
Help me understand again. We're looking for total number that is shipped?
Well, we know the total number. I know that from reading up, and it was also in the Ultimate Entrepreneur, 250,000 was mentioned in there. And I happened to do a study a few years ago. The other one, what Jim wanted to know, was how much money associated with it since we did it for 20 years. And the the last 3 years, you guys have done a total of $2.8 billion in ships. So the curious thing for us, because one of the history points is marketing had a very, very conservative plan, and engineering had a very wild plan. And 10 years ago, Andy Knowles showed us what actually happened in the first 4 years, and it was like 6 to 8 times as fast as the wild-ass engineers figured out it would be.
So what we ought to dredge up right now is, what were those numbers being guessed by the people in this room, the lows and the highs?
Let me add to your task. Since the company now says it's a software company, although at that time we said we were a manufacturing company, you might come up with 3 categories, if you can. The hardware, what we got for the systems, the software, and what the field service revenues have been on an ongoing basis.
That probably dwarfs all the rest.
And
are you puning the reliability of the machine, Tom?
You bet.
Look at who the designer was.
Well, that's the other point. It might be nice if that matrix was segmented out. Those 3 items were segmented out for the different machine types, because some of us disclaim responsibility for some other people's machines.
Jimmy, we only talk about machines that were released.
Yeah, not most of your designs.
Well, we do know that there are still some 1120s under field service contracts.
Right.
Wow,
even
really?
Even
to this day.
We just acquired one from the University of Texas.
Number 1 was in Tennessee.
I got number 7 to 15.
I thought it was Florida. Huh? I thought it was Florida.
No, the one we sent to Tennessee was in the one to Florida. Those were the first.
These are the ones that our management absolutely promised would be local in New England,
right,
so that we'd not have to overextend ourselves in maintaining them.
Yeah, it's like the first PDP-6 went to Perth, Australia on the same basis.
Way back then, were we actually charging for the software, or did we consider that a necessary evil? And
I don't know when we started.
It was bundled.
The only thing we charged for was O'Loughlin's ECO to correct his mistake, remember? The big system ECO that we sold 1,000 of them, Ken, you remember?
Get the revenue on that one, too.
Steve Borgman was always bitched about the fact that I did that. Charged an option cost.
Well, that wasn't so bad. When we came out with the next machine, customers called up wanting the same option.
It was the extended one, so it would work in the big systems like it was supposed to, with more than one box.
As our original idea of the PDP-11 was that it was a 16-bit PDP-8.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, when you went out to Westfield, after a year, you would see these 4 and 5 H916
yes,
cabinets bolted together with a variety of options. And there seemed to be some problem with NPR latency, I think, that had to be rectified.
Ronald Foss was making all these phone calls.
See, the way we shipped product in those days was we had an engineer go with the machine. First of all, we had an engineer help the technician on the floor check out the machine. And the way the engineer got there was he drove from the mill to Westfield, and it just excited the hell out of them. And then, when the hardware person
was out there,
then the hardware person would say, "It's not my problem; it's a software bug."
And nobody could ever find the tell.
Yeah. The situation was the difference, the way we do things today, and I think those days that we try to fully load a system today and exercise the heck out of it with MDM or operating systems. And that was unfortunate because when we were up in the mill coming out with the first 1120s with the CPU and a little bit of memory, we weren't fully loading systems at that time. And as we progressed, we found those problems in manufacturing, unfortunately, a lot of them in manufacturing.
I think we have to keep in mind that the PDP-11 operating system was being developed.
It didn't exist. It
didn't exist when the machine came out.
Was that DOS?
And then we had Ristis and bumps. And
DOS was T14 or something like that.
So for a long time, you couldn't even build a configuration large enough to run. In fact, Andy had a great thought one time. Could we ship this machine with 1,000 words of memory? You wanted to, so we'd get a lower price on it.
Well, I do know that I think what Ron was talking about in the first system is very real. We didn't have the software done, and we certainly didn't have all the options available, at least when we were working through the processor memory debug. But it is my recollection that shortly thereafter, somewhere over in Building 1, there was a PDP-11 system machine, which was 4 or 5 cabinets long. And the test for the next 3 machines, the 05, the 40, and the 45, was that you had to hitch it up, run all the options, peripherals, and run the software, including the operating systems.
That was the machine Steve Rothman maintained.
Yep. And I think after that, we didn't have this type of system ECO.
Well, the other thing we had to remember was the 720 power supply. The first ones we shipped had 8 amps of plus 5. Hedberg, correct me if I'm wrong. Then we went up to 12 amps of plus 5. And then we went up to 16 amps of plus 5. And then we went up to 20 amps of plus 5, and we all did it in the same box. And when they came to Ken and I in weeks and said, we need another 2 amps of plus 5, we said, find somebody else to do it. But that was how much it extended. You know,
didn't we offer that as an option to the customer, knowing that we screwed up to begin with?
That was his ECO.
Hey, come on. Now, I said it was 12 amps straight up.
It was an ECO. How did he pull this one off?
That was the only catch 22.
That's right.
It turns out that the basic PDP-11 box was a 10.5-inch box, and the front part was console and logic.
Yeah.
And the back part was power supply. I happen to believe that was one of the ones where we had this clever idea of bringing the air in over the power supply and then putting it over the modules? Or was that a subsequent machine?
It was in parallel because we had the 5 system units in the remote. You had your CPU, Hamill's memory, and then the other 3 system units.
Okay, so the airflow in that machine was transverse.
Right. Left to right.
Okay.
The reason we had four fans was it was very easy to wire 110 or 220. Series power, etc.
Which isn't allowed anymore.
That's right.
But
remember the Japanese machines?
Yeah.
They used to, that you couldn't call
yes.
Because of the because of the power.
Yeah.
100 volts.
Yeah. The 105 was a killer.
Yeah.
Well, the point, the catch 22 I was getting to on the power supply though was as follows: if you provided more space for the power supply, you decreased the amount of logic you could put in the box, and you didn't need the power. And the solution space there got to be put more power in the same space with perhaps somewhat less. Is this going outside the company? Less reliability. I think you better add it heavily if it is going outside the company.
Oh, this is history.
Hey, it's
okay.
Is statute of limitations expired?
Jim, you don't even need to get defensive.
That's right.
Me, defensive?
Jump defense.
He really has no one. If you think about it, you've been here for what, 25 minutes? He hasn't spit on anybody.
That's because you're far away from him.
He's just on good behavior. He hasn't changed.
What was the, you mentioned the 16-bit PDP-8. We had eights and the whole 10 family at the time
and
of the 11.
15s.
And the 15s, right.
And 14.
12.
Well, the 14s and the 12s really weren't machines.
Why did, why
in... The 12 was a PDK-8i.
I know, but it was really a test, let's face it. I mean, it was a specialized all the way.
Well, let her ask the question.
Why did Digital put together a PDP-11? Why did, how did that development effort start? What was the reason?
DG had one, we had to have one.
We had one. DG didn't have one at that time.
It was time for a 16-bit machine, and everybody understood it.
We were 3 years late.
No, it was 8 bits that was crucial. It was
the
data format.
It was the 8-bit byte, and we needed a multiple of 8 bits. It was the issue that we had at that time.
But I mean, it was normally the time for 16-bit. Everything was swinging out.
I got a question to the group. When DeCastro went to the operations committee with
the X.
Oh, I was there at that meeting.
At that meeting.
Oh, great.
Isn't that what accelerated us to service a 16-bit machine?
There was a 16-bit machine.
I
don't
know.
I know
it was. Well, the fact that it got shot down, and then Ed went off and started DG.
I ran into Pat Green 2 months ago, and he told me the inside story from his part. And believe it or not, Pat came back, and when he found out what DeCastro did, he found him outside, and he nailed him. And you know how quiet Pat was, and he nailed him, knocked him flat in his ass, because
right.
he cheated, and he turned over all of this, because Pat was going to be the president of Data General, okay? And he turned over all of the business plans and all to Ken before he quit, because he felt like he couldn't stay on, so he quit, but he didn't go to Data General.
Yeah.
And he's up in Lowell now, and he owns his own little company, and I run into him every now and then. And
where is he?
He's in a place in Lowell, and he has his own company. But we had to do it because the Nova was going along, and I remember 3 months after we started shipping, Ken was screaming, especially at Jim and all the rest of us. And Ken, we were in a meeting because they were shipping $16 million worth of equipment, and we weren't getting anything out. And that's when we said to them, at the end of the year, we'll more than double their business, and the only reason they're ahead of us is you gave them a year's head start by letting them leave. And I believe that was either Ken or Jim had said that to Ken at the time. And then we ended up, within the first full year of production, we doubled the output of what the Novas were going on.
Now, I don't remember anybody leaning heavily, certainly not Ken, upon myself. Roger Katie may have taken a lot of flack.
All in the meeting, and you were there, and you forget it.
Oh, no.
He's gonna see
the biggest thing I remember was we fabricated the PDP-11 twice.
Yeah.
And we built it up out of flip chips. Well, sorry, flip chips.
Yeah,
M-series, though. At least they were ICs. They weren't the old transistor ones. And we wired it into a back panel.
The big rat's nest.
And it kept growing because, you know,
right.
I go home at night and I draw some more circuits to get something else to work. And we just kept adding to it.
You have to shoot the engineer to get the...
Yeah, Buzinski and I hated
it. No, no, no. If you wanted a full instruction instead of three quarters of it,
you had
to wire in the rest of it.
That's right.
And we also had the... we had what I would purport to be the Q-bus.
That's right. We didn't have
in the first instance, because we were doing it... We were doing a time revision.
Yeah, the DCM, the desktop.
No. This is after DCM. The first PDP-11 breadboard had a time multiplex bus. Where address and data went down the same lines. The second etched version ended up with the wider unibus. But the first one was like the Q-bus.
Yeah.
The breadboard version.
Yeah, because the second one is when Paul and I started working on the cards and all the rest of the unibus.
But
yeah.
The biggest thing I remember that is somewhere that summer before we shipped, the unit was operational. It was running some software. And the executive committee came up. And Ken went over and looked at the machine, you know, and here I am, you know, this is my first machine design. I'm sort of concerned that, you know, what's going to be said, you know. And the only response I remember from that was adverse was Ken did not like the plastic toggles on the slide switch on the front panel.
That's
some people never
We had the old PDP-8 slide switches with the plastic toggles that just moved the slide. They weren't real toggles.
The other thing you got right off about switching AC through the front switch directly.
I remember beating on the machine one day down there.
No, the AC didn't go through the front switch. I had that problem on the PDP-8i and changed it.
Beat on that machine. You and Roger Cady and somebody else there.
Didn't we change it before we shipped it?
No.
No.
We had the three position on and all the rest, so you could pull it out and you could keep running. And it has three cams on the back of the Chicago key switch.
I would have thought we changed that, because I know the PDP-8i always had the problem when you put out 220 volts and tried to switch it. You could cause
a machine. What we did on the 11 was we just broke one side of it, the hot side.
Okay.
Because we were coming off a delta switch and we had 110 to ground on each side of it, remember? We didn't have a regular 220.
No, I don't remember.
Well, that was what Neville and I
had. I've got a non-advanced case of what Saki
was. You were doing the hardware. Because Neville had the job of putting it in 5 1/4-inch box originally, and we couldn't do it. And
now
the main
did.
Reason we couldn't do it was because of the module size you needed. Remember that?
Yeah, we changed the module size.
I remember that we worked on a 5 1/4, and we also worked on a 2-block casting instead of a 3-block with a 5 1/4. And we shifted it to a 3-block for the 1120 in order to keep the cables in the, you know, the A and B slots, I guess. The other thing I'm trying to figure out is who did the power supply, because I remember Dick
Barry
Best coming.
It was Don White, Dick Best, Ken, Greg Essop, me. Yeah, it was the switch and power supply, which we've never done it.
Yeah.
But Greg Essel was the main guy. He was the technician, and everybody helped him out. And people would come down, like Dick Best, reading the book and say, try this and try that, because we didn't know what the hell we were doing.
Well, didn't Barry end up responsible?
Well, he ended up coming in right after we started.
Cornell. He didn't know any better, and he got started on the power supplies on my stuff, on the discs.
I needed
a power supply for my discs. And somebody asked him, can you do a power supply? Sure.
That's why we called Cornell, so that they wouldn't understand they were getting the power supply responsibility.
Word had spread locally.
But anyway, that's how we got suckered into this.
Now, we did do something differently in that power supply that I liked. And that was a result of the PDP-8. Because I thought we had fixed the AC in the front switch. The PDP-8 used to have a power fail. Unfortunately, the power fail signal was after the DC voltage had passed through 5 volts. So there was just a DC low type signal on the PDP-8i. And you used to live on the fact that ICs really would work to 3.5 volts. At least in the PDP-11, we did put in the fact that you lost AC power and you should begin to go down.
Well, there are lots of real firsts in that machine that I look back at, because I've had actually over the years individual folks calling me up asking me why did we do certain things, and I was especially impressed with the bus structure itself. So I'm surprised Jensen's not here. I'd love to see him. But it was the first time we had specific ICs used as receivers. I mean, those are new chips essentially to us, and it was a singular bus instead of individual I/O cables going out to individual options, and that had some very large impact on the system. And the fact that we were the first ones to use really big disks back then, 1.2 megabyte disks were really big, because the machines prior to that used drums. I mean, huge Vermont Research drums, and this was so nice, because I had spent years working on Vermont Research drums, and what was the other one? Big, huge Bryant drums for PDP-10s. I did all that stuff, and I finally came down to this group and did this little tiny disc, which had 1.2 megabytes. Wow, I was so impressed. So it was the first time we ever used really small discs, physically small with large capacity. And that was really a first for these machines, which I think is what made the whole thing fit into the commercial market space.
The R32 was the first
one. First one was the R32, then the R64.
Then the double density.
The RK.
See, the RS stuff is all fixed head stuff.
No, didn't we
look at it? Which really limited its application into the commercial market spaces, because nobody could carry anything around. Couldn't carry this cabinet with it. So the RKs were the first ones to allow us to do removable stuff.
That was the RKO2.
They came out about a year after FRS or something like that.
That was the RKO2?
Yeah, Archaeo 2 and Archaeo 3. Yeah. Yeah.
Tom was the main man on that.
Caused by the cycling and manufacturing, you used to be able to get out to the customer in the last two more cycles and then it'd die again.
And the way you fixed them was took the platter out and turned it over.
Flip it over?
Right. Oh, no. He did that, but then you went in the men's room and got the pink soap. See, we would build them in a white room with the mask and the booties and everything, but field service would take them out and go to the men's room and use that nice silicone base soap, and they wouldn't squeal anymore. And they wouldn't work.
How could we never told engineering?
Data integrity.
Well, we said St. Omer and Sevilla, something's wrong, yeah. You know? So he says, well, get Arthur D. Little. So Arthur D. Little came up and tried to figure out what was going on, and they blamed it on a bunch of things. But anyway, the service continued to take care of the problem.
I have a question about the bus. And the CPU was 16 bits, and we finally ended up at 22. And I've heard lots of different stories about how we got there. Why did we end up with an 18-bit unibus?
It was jumps.
Well, there were two things. Address expansion was considered.
At the outset?
Yes. And second, there were two bits put in there, two extra bits to, I'm not sure I'm up to 22 yet, but in any case, there were two bits in there for doing other things.
Just slight spare.
Yes. One of the things that was considered in the 1140, the next machine I was involved in, was